Hello, I'm Travis Todd. This is number 0299, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0299. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Andy Selsberg, author of The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. What does the word jottery mean?
I always like to jot things down. I always have for years. I think it has several meanings. Maybe like the lottery of jotting. You have this mixture. Like you're always jotting things down in little books, napkins, and maybe one of them will hit it big, like with lottery tickets. But maybe you'll also just have fun, you know, playing the game and dreaming.
Science writer Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, talks about NASA's Messenger mission to Mercury.
We had basically one flyby mission in the early 70s, the Mariner 10 mission. Since then, because of that one mission that mapped part of the planet, we've only known actually half of the planet that's been mapped. So now, with this mission, we've completely mapped the entire planet, and we've found very clear evidence of volcanism with lava flows coming out. So it means that it was a geologically active world at one point, much more like Earth, possibly.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He talks about the vandalism of a high-flying billboard, among other things.
What happened is some guy, who the New York Times called an artist, attached a can of spray paint to a drone and sent it off into the wild blue yonder to spray paint a billboard for Calvin Klein, which featured Kendall. She's one of the Jenner Kardashian cartels.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0299, was Travis Todd, promotions producer at Global Montreal, the other place that I work. And thank you very much, Travis, for doing the guest slate on this program, number 0299 of the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A Nebraska woman filed a 7-page handwritten court brief detailing her lawsuit against all homosexuals on behalf of God and his son, Jesus Christ. 66-year-old Sylvia Driscoll of Auburn filed a federal lawsuit in Omaha asking for a federal judge to rule on whether or not homosexuality is a sin. Driscoll's 7-page court brief, which was entirely handwritten, I may add, and with a lot of mistakes, described the woman as an ambassador for plaintiffs God and his son, Jesus Christ. The defendants' lists in this lawsuit are homosexuals. Noted, the group uses the name or alias gay. By the way, she misspelled alias as well. The brief cites several Bible verses and argues that homosexuality is a sin and that they, the homosexuals, know it is a sin to live a life of homosexuality. Why else would they be hiding in the closet? Okay. Driscoll cited the biblical destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah as evidence of God's distaste for immoral behavior. I never thought I would see a day when our great nation and our own great state of Nebraska would become so compliant to the complicity of some people's lewd behavior, Driscoll wrote. Why are judges passing laws so sinners can break religious and moral laws? Will all the judges of this nation judge God to be a liar? And by the way, she misspelled liar as well. You know, I think this point needs to be said at this moment, that Driscoll was representing herself in the lawsuit. No lawyer was involved. Yeah. Honestly, aren't you just dying to see her witness list? But in all seriousness, we hear each week on this program from Bob DiRigo Jones about the expense of frivolous lawsuits on Let's Be Fair. If this doesn't qualify as one, then I don't know what does. And apparently, the judge agreed because U.S. District Judge John Girard said that Driscoll's complaint failed to set forth, among other things, naming at least one defendant and what relief she was seeking in the matter. Well, she did technically list two defendants, God and Jesus Christ, but I guess defendants have to be, you know, living at least within the last 2,000 years. Judge John Girard said that Driscoll's complaint failed to set forth, as I mentioned, other things, naming at least one defendant. Girard also noted that the court may decide what is lawful, not what is sinful. Driscoll will not have the opportunity to amend her complaint because, in Girard's words, it is obvious that amendment would be futile. In closing, Girard issued a warning to others who may attempt similar frivolous lawsuits. This court is not the place to seek opinions regarding theological matters. This particular form is closed, and the case will be dismissed, he said. So, there you have it, Ms. Driscoll. Back under your rock. And to a much lesser degree, we have another moronic claim here. The public library in Toronto revealed the list of books that it was asked to remove from its collection last year, including the 1963 Dr. Seuss tale, Hop on Pop. The complaint was that it was violent and encouraged children to be violent with their fathers, says Vickery Bowles, who is the Toronto Public Library's Director of Collections Management, whatever that means. And not just removal, the patron who asked for a public apology, or also, by the way, asked for a public apology, to Greater Toronto Area Fathers and payment of reparations. The offending language? Let me share it with you. Hop, pop. We like to hop. We like to hop on top of pop. Stop. You must not hop on pop. Yeah, the library said the request was surprising, but they took it very seriously, just as it does every other complaint, but declined to remove the book from the children's collection. You know, they could have responded as Dr. Seuss. Nope, dope. To give in to a dope on a silly trope is a slippery slope. There you go. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a West Virginia man is in jail after authorities say he foiled his own robbery by accidentally pepper spraying himself. 43-year-old Michael Kevin Meadows of Shady Spring, West Virginia, was arrested for attempted robbery. Authorities say a man went into a pharmacy in Beaver, West Virginia, and really, they need to change their name, wearing full camouflage and a paintball mask. The would-be robber started spraying pepper spray in an effort to take down employees, then walked into the cloud of pepper spray in front of him. Police say security footage showed he was affected by his own pepper spray. He staggered out of the business and got into a vehicle. Police investigating the incident discovered the name of the man who was driving the vehicle. The driver identified Meadows as the attempted robbery suspect. Talk about not ready for prime time crime. You know, some people just simply can't handle pepper. That's the way it goes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? May is Creative Beginnings Month, which is a good time to talk to Andy Selsberg. That's because the former staff writer for The Onion and stand-up comic has written a book called The Jottery: Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. He joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Andy.
Hello there.
So which one are you? Are you a part-time genius or everyday philosopher or both?
I think I'm both. A part-time genius.
Okay. What does the term jottery mean anyway?
It was just sort of in one of the questions. I think it, I always like to jot things down. I always have for years. I think it has several meanings. Maybe like the lottery of jotting. You know, this mixture, like you're always jotting things down in little books, napkins, and maybe one of them will hit it big, like with lottery tickets, but maybe you'll also just have fun, you know, playing the game and dreaming.
Okay, so what was the genesis and the idea of creating this book, The Jottery?
Well, I've always liked the sort of humor section in, well, we'll go back to Walden Books when I was growing up, which doesn't exist anymore, but in Barnes & Noble now. And I've always liked those Zen cones, like those Sound of One Hand Clapping or Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy. that used to be on SNL. So it's sort of a combination of all these things, but I'm also a freshman English teacher, so I like giving assignments is kind of in my nature, but I don't like grading assignments. So these are, it's a combination of Zen cones and comedy lines and assignments that you don't have to do well on or I don't have to grade. And it's all these things that have sort of come together.
Your classes must be a blast.
I think maybe. They're fun, but I don't know if I'm really doing what needs to be done. I'm too groovy, the groovy teacher. You need to be the hard-headed teacher, maybe is what they need.
Well, you know, with every Professor Kingsfield out there from the Paper Chase, there's got to be the groovy teacher, too.
Yes, I like to have them stand up on the desk and sing poems in my honor.
Okay, so give us an idea of the kind of things you'd find in the Jottery.
Okay, well, one of them I'm just looking at is, so it's all these questions. Some of them you could shout that you're supposed to either answer or think about answering. What are the saddest foods to feed squirrels or birds?
I'm sorry, what was that one?
What are the saddest foods to feed squirrels or birds?
I'm guessing Twizzlers.
Twizzlers, yes. I think it's any Dorito product that is that has like a Mountain Dew co-branded flavor sprinkle on it. My wife suggested any power bar that is marketed towards women, like Luna bars. List 7 uses for decommissioned street mailboxes. List 12 shocking Bloody Mary add-ins.
Now, you know what's interesting about this is you've got some really esoteric questions out there. Do you actually get answers from people about this, and are you ever surprised by the answers?
Well, it's just, it doesn't really exist yet. Like, just yesterday, I took it for its first test run in my class, and I gave them more of the realistic ones. Like, what are some curses you could put on people that would irritate but not ruin them? And they had some good ideas, like, you had some itch on and off. I was like, okay, that's a good one. It's not out there yet, so I don't know what kind of responses people will issue.
When writing a book like this, which basically just asks a lot of questions, how do you know when you're writing it, when you're finished? I mean, this is something that could literally go on forever.
No, it could. That's the problem with it. It's just sort of, kind of got exhausted with it, but I still keep it teaches you to think in a certain way. Like I just see a story about McDonald's as a new president, and I think, oh, a good question would be, a realistic one is, what are 10 ideas to save McDonald's? And I was like, oh, this is somebody's actual job, but it'd be fun also to do it as a parlor game or just exercise. Okay, here's this company that has reigned and needs a new direction. That's a more realistic one.
Boy, it sounds like some of your ideas might be the kind of things that'll be stolen by BuzzFeed.
I hope so. That is the dream. But there are list 10 non-existent but necessary hotlines.
10 non-existent but necessary hotlines.
Right. Wow. There's like depression hotlines, but is there a vague dread hotline or a replace or repair hotline? Like you're not sure you have some clothing or technological object that you're not sure if you should replace it or repair it, and maybe call this hotline.
Now, when you come up with these questions, when you come up with these deep thoughts, do you yourself ever think of the answer, or are you just putting the questions out there in the cosmos?
No, I do try and come up with the answers. Like this one, and then some of them I put in the book to try and give you an idea. And you're supposed to be able to read the book. You don't have to come up with anything. You can read the questions are supposed to be entertaining in themselves. Like one of them is make up three tricks casinos use to trick customers. For example, the floor vibrates at a low frequency that can't be consciously felt but subconsciously alters the brain's gambling receptors. Or one of them is to invent wild new cocktail ingredients, and it's, for example, a splash of reality show hot tub water. That's, I think, my favorite one.
Okay. Well, let me ask you one of your own questions.
Yes.
And that is, you've broken free of desires. Now what do you want?
All right. That's one that I think is maybe supposed to thwart actually answering. You're supposed to maybe meditate on that one. You're broken. No, see, yeah, some of them. All right. Yeah, that I think is just, I think that's just supposed to put your head in a space. Broken free of desires, right? No, there are other ones like that. Like, you're at peace. Now what? Like, there are all these things where, like, it's also sort of like, we have all these books. They're like, oh, happiness. Like, here's how to be happy. But then what? You just walk around like, I am happy all the time. Like, oh, well, of course there are going to be new hungers and new desires and things like that. Like, wait, what do you do if you don't want anything? I don't know. I guess I would clean the garage, dirty the mess up the garage.
Okay, so besides writing this book and also, you know, testing these out in classes that you teach, are you the kind of person that would throw these out at total strangers, like, you know, when you're sitting on the subway or on a long-distance flight?
I would not. No, I would need to. I mean, I really need to take the temperature of the situation and see if they're really looking for that sort of thing.
Because I'll say this as an endorsement for your book. I think this is the new form of small talk, which supplants what I've always hated, just simply talking about the weather.
Right.
I think, you know, this is the direction we're going.
I hope so. It could be. You've blown through most of your lottery winnings. What are the five things you might do with the last $850?
Oh, wow. I like that one. Invest in more lottery tickets. There you go.
Right, invest in more. I'd like to buy the house around as many rounds as I could. I feel like that would be like a good thing to do. I've never done that before.
Okay, well, let me ask you another one of your questions. How about this? What new Hall of Fames do we need?
Wait, what was it?
What new Hall of Fame do we need?
Oh, yes, that's a good one. The Napper Hall of Fame? the Perennial Student Hall of Fame? Like, who are the great people who've just been students their whole lives? And I did think of that one to my students. One of them suggested the Beer Pong Player Hall of Fame. And I did look up, and there is a DJ Hall of Fame. I don't know if you are in it or you are aspiring to be in it.
No, I'm not.
The Home Fire Builders Hall of Fame. But I just like... Again, like, that's a good parlor game one, right? They're like, oh, yeah. The Cool Bookshelf Haver Hall of Fame.
Now, what are your hopes and dreams? I get the impression that this is a book, The Jottery, that could actually take off and either spawn another series of books or at least a sequel, or maybe things like block calendars with sayings on each one. Do you have future plans for The Jottery?
Bless you for saying that, but it's too, I think I would love for that stuff to happen. I feel like it's too, I mean, this is my third book, and so I have realistic expectations, and it's so hard for something to hit that vein of interest in the culture. I would love for it to be, my original idea for it was to be an app, because I was like, oh, whenever I'm on my phone, it's all so directed. It's like, oh, I'm checking the scores. Oh, I'm checking if there are any shorts on sale. Oh, I am looking at news headlines on the Times. It's just like there are no apps that are dedicated to just, or this addictive games out there. There are no apps that are just, oh, here's this daydreamy space, this something like that. But I don't have no idea. I feel like you need to be already partnered with somebody. And since it's not, it doesn't have obvious like business use, so I would like it. I would love for it to be, so, you know, here's a space on your device where it's not immediately just like a service. It's just a space in there for dreaming and for thinking strangest thoughts.
I think it's a great idea for an app. In the meantime, it certainly is a great idea for the book. The book is called The Jottery. Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. Andy, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Andy Selsberg, author of The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0299, and you'll find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from the outskirts of sanity, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come to the program, we'll talk to Andrew Vizekas, the night sky guy, about the NASA messenger mission to Mercury. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. Stick around for that. We also have much more Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day coming your way here on a program. Also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, a Maryland police officer bit a man's testicles during an off-duty fight outside a Baltimore bar and has been charged with assault. Anne Arundel County police officer Michael Flagg, who was 31, was arrested and charged after attacking the victim, who was not named by Baltimore police. The fight stemmed from an argument that began after Flagg was accused of making unwanted sexual advances toward the victim's roommate. Baltimore police said in the charges document that the victim told Flagg to stop and that the two got into an argument. The man left the bar and Flagg attacked him in an alley. That's what police say. He attempted to punch the victim, missing, and fell down. The victim pinned Flagg to the ground, straddled him around the upper body and neck area, police said. Flagg then bit the man's testicles, according to the court documents. Ouch. The victim was treated at the scene for injuries to his testicles, knees, elbows, and lip. Is that something you want to be treated for at the scene? Take me to the hospital, please. Flagg fled, but was found at a nearby bar with blood on his shirt and was arrested on misdemeanor charges of second-degree assault, public intoxication, and endangering the victim's safety. Another unidentified man involved in the attack fled and is at large. Flagg, an officer for 10 years, has been suspended and placed on paid administrative duties. He is scheduled to appear in court on June 19th. Here is the quote of the day. These charges are disturbing, and we have an obligation as police officers to conduct ourselves in a professional manner on and off duty. That quote comes from Anne Arundel County Chief of Police. That's Timothy J. Altomare. Yes, because, you know, if there's one thing Baltimore area police officers don't need right now is bad press. And that's not what McGruff, by the way, means when he says that he wants to take a bite out of crime. Yeah. Okay. In April, A court in Munich, Germany, ordered a dentist, identified only as K, to pay the equivalent of about $21,000 to patient Alex S. for pulling all of his teeth. He only had 19, by the way. Over 4 weeks of treatments as the remedy for his schizophrenia and erectile dysfunction. The dentist had testified that Alex had too much bone inflammation for ordinary fillings. Kay made his own claim for the equivalent of about $54,000 for the damage to his professional reputation that the trial had caused, but the court rejected it. Okay, what I want to know is, how do you convince someone that pulling out their teeth, all of their teeth, will help with their erectile dysfunction? And by the way, the inability to smile may surely cut down on dating opportunities, methinks. Okay, apparently there is a shortage of sperm in South Africa. That could be the only explanation to this next story. I mean, how would you explain what's going on there? A ring of women in South Africa are kidnapping men for their semen. Most recently, a man was kidnapped at gunpoint and raped by three women who collected his semen in a cooler and stealing it before abandoning their victim. This method seems to be part of a growing trend. The 33-year-old man gave the woman directions when they pulled up in a black BMW. Suddenly, one of the women, armed with a gun, got out and forced him into the back of the car. The trio then drove him over 100 miles away and fondled him in the back of the car, but he did not become aroused. So they forced him to drink an unknown substance from a bottle to aid him. They then raped the man repeatedly and collected his semen in plastic bags, placing them in a cooler. The man was then kicked out of the car while the women made off with the stolen sperm. The exact same method is being used by women in Gauteng, who were also forcing men to drink from a bottle and stealing their semen, but no arrests have been made yet. One particular constable said they then forced him to drink an unknown substance from the bottle. This got him aroused quickly enough that he was, even though he was still scared and didn't want to have sex. This is really confusing to us because we have never heard of such a thing before. The man was fully conscious throughout his ordeal and he is still traumatized. Police have now opened a rape investigation. Write your own punchline here, folks, because I have nothing to add to this one. Not even going there. Not even close. But we do have time for one more Stuff File news story before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. The boat didn't leak. That's a quote from an unnamed would-be sailor from Clacton-on-Sea in Essex in England. I do it again. The man and his friend, both in their 20s, built a boat from £9 or about $13.50 US worth of foam insulation panels held together with coat hangers and glue. They had a successful fishing trip, I'm doing air quotes for that, catching some cod and crabs before their homemade oars fell apart, leaving them adrift 200 meters off the coast. They were rescued by the Clacton Royal National Lifeboat Institution crew. No one was injured, but their boat was destroyed, apparently by the RNLI. They were the ones who said, no, this is going to be broken up. That sort of boat was not something we've ever seen before, said lifeboat volunteer Joff Strutt. Neither of the men had life jackets, and one of them couldn't even swim. What, did they have a death wish? They were very, very lucky that they were spotted, and things could have been a lot worse. So, the only part of this story that wasn't a total failure apparently was destroyed. Because apparently, as they say, the boat did work, but the Clacton Royal National Lifeboat Institute destroyed it for them. So there you go. These guys could have easily been the idiots of the week, by the way. Or, at the very least, part of the Darwin File Starter Kit, but they were not. However, you know, I did say Darwin File Starter Kit. Give them time, because I don't think we've heard the last of these two clowns. That's just a guess on my part. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? NASA's Messenger was the first spacecraft ever to orbit Mercury, and it recently crash-landed on the planet. But that was to be expected, as its life was over, with a mission that lasted four times its original timeline. We're joined once again on the program by science writer Andrew Vazakis, the night sky guy, and a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. He joins us on the line from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Peter.
So this was a pretty spectacular crash, I understand. Four times longer than its original mission. When did it first lift off, and how long was it supposed to last?
Well, you know, the missions really started back in 2004, and you know, it took a winding road to get there. It only got there four years ago in 2011, and that's because it made flybys of Earth and Venus as well multiple times, because it needed to get enough speed and change its direction, and it used the slingshot effect, basically, from the planets. These two planets to get to its location, and so it's a known way of actually using spacecrafts to go close by planets and doing these slingshot effects using the gravitational pull of planets to get you to certain locations. And it's also a very cheap way to get to your destination. Unfortunately, it's usually a roundabout way. So in this case, it did take a number of years, and it got to Mercury and went into orbit in 2011, and it's just had a stupendous run of luck in terms of opening up wonderful science.
Okay,
in terms of our understanding of the planet.
Okay, so it made these 15 trips around the sun. This is boomerang or slingshot effect, as you were saying. But with those, was it planned to make that many trips around the sun? In other words, was its initial trip to Mercury delayed in any way, shape, or form?
Well, you know, it would probably have to. In terms of how long it takes. Yeah, I mean, this is something that they have to pre-calculate to be able to do this, because they can't just do it on the fly. It's something that's known, and really, there's a lot of budget constraints, especially with missions. You know, if you go back, I think back to my childhood when that was back in the 70s and 80s, when there was the Voyager class missions. These are the, you know, multi-billion dollar missions. Voyager was one of the big ones, and then there was, of course, Cassini, Galileo, and a lot of these missions, you know, they could go directly to the locations that they wanted to without necessarily doing a slingshot effect. But these lower budget missions are just not capable of actually going to a lot of these destinations in the most direct route, because it's very expensive in terms of fuel, using fuel, and that's some of the most expensive stuff that we could do methods. So the engineers and scientists came up with these really neat slingshot effect ideas to get to destination. You just have to be a lot more patient, because it takes a while to get there.
Okay, so how long was this mission supposed to be? Because as I said in the intro, it lasted, what, I think I said four times longer than its original timeline?
Exactly. So it was supposed to last for about a year, finish up in 2012. But the scientists were really, you know, that's the main mission. And they kind of knew that they would probably have, if everything went well, they would have a lot longer lifespan for the spacecraft. And so they really tried to conserve the fuel as much as possible. And what's interesting, of course, towards the end, when they knew the demise was, you know, close at hand, they wrung out as much of the spacecraft as possible. They, even once the fuel had left out, this was about a week before it actually crashed, the scientists decided to use the helium cooling liquid that would cool the scientific instruments as a little bit of a jet fuel, and propping up the orbit of the spacecraft, just to give it a few more days of science. They really literally wrung out the last piece of science just because of the ingenuity of these engineers.
Okay, so it was supposed to be orbiting Mercury for about a year. It lasted for 4 years. What exactly did we learn?
Well, Mercury has been a pretty enigmatic object for us. I mean, we had basically one flyby mission in the early 70s, the Mariner 10 mission. And since then, in fact, we've only had, because of that one mission that mapped part of the planet, we've only known actually half of the planet that's been mapped. The other half was a completely unknown domain. So now with this mission, we've completely mapped the entire planet, and we've found very clear evidence. One of the interesting things that it's found is that there's clear evidence of volcanism on Mercury, which we never really, it was mostly in the realm of theory, and now we have clear evidence of that with lava flows coming out. So it means that it was a geologically active world at one point, much more like Earth possibly, which is very interesting. And it tells a lot of in terms of the evolution of planets, like terrestrial or Earth-like planets. They can start probably, what it tells us is that many of these planets in the inner solar system share a similar origin. We're talking billions of years ago, maybe 4.5 billion years in the past. And they've evolved in taken very different courses of evolution, for some being very dry, some being very hot, runaway greenhouse effect in case of Venus. And in Mercury, poor little Mercury being stuck very close to the sun. And also showing us that there is this deep shared heritage amongst Earth and its other inner solar system planets is that they found water ice in deep embedded inside craters along the polar regions. This was very unexpected because this planet is so close to the sun. But the fact that they've found evidence of water ice embedded at the deepest parts of the craters that are permanently in shadow, that's how they survive, that this tells us also that it was bombarded probably by water-bearing comets, which is probably what we think water came to Earth as well, from water-bearing comets. So again, the shared history of all the planets in the inner solar system. So we're really putting this giant puzzle of us understanding all the inner planets, and piece by piece, each of these missions is just filling up that puzzle nicely, and MESSENGER did a wonderful job with Mercury.
Now, I saw you talking on television about this about a week ago, and the thing that caught my attention was the fact that they crash-landed this thing on the far side of the planet, and I believe you said that if they wanted to go and retrieve anything about it or from it, or see what its damage was to both itself and the planet, it would take 10 years to get there because of where it crashed, correct?
Yeah, I mean, basically right now we're kind of relegated to instruments that are on Earth and our space telescopes that are orbiting Earth. So for all intents and purposes, you know, we're stuck from our line of sight, which is, you know, we're talking, you know, tens of millions of kilometers that of gulf of space between us. And it's literally on the other side of the planet. And we are not able to view anything. We can't view in detail enough to see we think is about a 30-meter cross crater that we're talking about.
Okay, here's my point. Are they not just getting, quite frankly, greedy? I mean, it's been 4 years, which is four times the length of what this was supposed to do. If couldn't they have just crash-landed it sooner from a vantage point that they could see from Earth?
They probably could have, but I think what the scientists were thinking about, obviously I'm not in their heads, but having talked to a lot of scientists in terms of different space missions, I know that, you know, they are in the frame of mind is that, look, the taxpayers paid for this mission, and you know, everything after a year is really a bonus, like you said. You know, it's amazing how much science, and they wanted to get as much science. They're going to have to, there was sort of a decision that they had to make in terms of where they're going. Do we want to have the crash landing observable, or do we want to get more science? Is there something more that we want to learn, you know, get more data as it's while it's still flying? And I think they made the right choice in that respect, because it's not the end of the road for us. In 10 years, the Europeans are slated to actually launch a nice follow-up mission to Mercury. And so we expect that once that mission does arrive in the new decade, in the 2020s, we'll be able to follow up on what happened to MESSENGER and actually see the crater. And that will open up new science as well, because it's basically a you know, it's like a free geologic experiment because we've busted a hole on Mercury, we've dug up fresh material from underneath, and that's really a whole, you know, geologist's dream because we'll be able to understand what the interior of this planet is because we've busted a hole into it.
I just think we could have gotten that information sooner if we had picked a side we could see it from, but that's just me.
But yeah, you know, the thing is, though, you have to remember there's this huge gulf of distance that separates us from with our telescopes here to where Mercury is. And even through the largest telescopes, Mercury from our vantage point is really a small, tiny, little unassuming disk, even if Hubble would, and by the way, Hubble cannot be trained on Mercury because it's just too close to the sun. Remember, from our vantage point, Mercury hugs the sun very closely and is never far away. Its orbit is very tight. So our telescopes, it's an extreme challenge for them to actually see it. So like Hubble and its cousin space telescopes are never pointed towards that part of the sky because it's just there's a big chance of them frying their electronics because of the heat from the sun. So really our best bet is to wait for the next spacecraft that will actually go to the planet and take up-close images.
Interesting stuff indeed. Andrew, always a pleasure to have you on the program. How can people find you?
Well, they can actually go to my website, thenightskyguy.com, where I have the latest in terms of stargazing news. And, of course, if they want a weekly sky-watching guide, they can follow my weekly column at National Geographic News.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Andrew. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure. Clear skies.
Andrew Fizakis, The Night Sky Guy. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com. And, of course, you'll find the link on my website at thestufffile.com. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. The famous poet Gertrude Stein once said, "A rose is a rose is a rose." What she meant, according to many scholars, is that when all is said and done, a thing is what it is. That's pretty simple, but the message even applies to law. It's the idea behind the open and obvious rule that bans lawsuits over obvious dangers. Take a knife, for example. If it's made correctly, it's sharp, so a knife maker should not be sued if someone carelessly cuts himself. While this is simple, too many judges ignore it, like the time a judge allowed a grocery store to be sued after a man pricked his finger on a rose. Let's be fair, it wasn't that long ago that a lawsuit like that would be dismissed and the lawyer fined. But nowadays? Well, warning labels that caution us to avoid risks that are obvious are everywhere, and that's why we hold our wacky warning label contest every year. If you'd like to see some of the most outrageous labels we've received, or even send us a label you've found, visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And coming to you from New York City, where it's springtime and everyone is happy, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, joins us once again. Hello, Peter.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the beautiful streets of New York. And yes, indeed, you do not speak with a forked tongue. You do speak the truth. Everybody is happy because we got temperatures now in the 70s, the 80s. A horrible, rough, mean, miserable winter is over. So everybody's in a good mood. Lovely, lovely, lovely.
Glad to hear it. But I understand that there was a situation which there are a lot of people who like to use drones these days. They're very popular, but I've never heard of one using a drone for vandalism.
Well, listen, there's a question of when is it going to happen, not whether it was going to happen. What happened is some guy, who the New York Times called an artist, I'll get back to that in a minute, attached a can of spray paint to a drone and sent it off into the wild blue yonder to spray paint a billboard for Calvin Klein, which featured the model, Kendall. She's one of the Jenner Kardashian cartels.
Yes, Kendall Jenner.
And what they did is, He spray painted the billboard. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at my website, Gabby.com, there's a picture of what the damage was. But what I thought was the interesting thing, besides this great advance in graffiti technology, is that the New York Times referred to the guy as an artist. Excuse me. I think you and I are going to go to his house and put graffiti all over it and see how much he likes graffiti.
So have they caught this guy? Do they know who did it, or...?
Yeah, they know. They had his. I'm not mentioning his name because I don't feel like giving him any more publicity. But if anybody's dying to know who the guy was, I guess you can go to the New York Times and Google it. But I refuse. As a matter of fact, I had once vowed I'd never talk about the Kardashians or any of these people, and now I've been lulled into it. But you got to admit, it's kind of intriguing. Technology marches forward.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, I mean, we talk about drones. They're sort of like mini helicopters, but I understand that you can get a full-size helicopter if you want to spend some summertime in the Hamptons.
Okay, to the east of New York City, there's Long Island, which is 150 miles long, and it has many, many communities. The community, like the suburbs, let's call it. The community that I'm talking about right now is the Hamptons. That's very fancy schmancy, as we would say. That's where the beautiful people hang out during the summer. And every restaurant and every boutique that's in Manhattan sets up a satellite place out there. And what people do is they rent homes from the natives for thousands and thousands of dollars. And they go, the natives, that is, go away someplace else. It's the place to go to. But ordinary mortals will go out there by the Long Island Railroad or perhaps a bus or perhaps a car. But there's a whole bunch of people who go out there by helicopter from Manhattan. Now, you're talking about $1,600 a person round trip. When was the last time you spent $1,600 to go to the beach? And to add insult to injury, the people in the Hamptons, as the summer begins, are fit to be tied because the helicopters are coming day and night over their homes, the ones that haven't left. So it's a bit of a controversy. I think they may start using drones to shoot them down.
Meanwhile, in other news, the wife of America's first black president, that would be Bill Clinton, is running for presidency herself, and I understand that there's a film that is exposing where the Clinton cash is coming from?
Yeah, well, it's a book, soon to be a film, and as a matter of fact, I've also placed a picture of the cover on the website. It's a guy who's a writer, a journalist. Admittedly, he's a kind of a right-wing conservative Republican type, so he has no love lost for the Clintons, but he points out that they have made millions and millions and millions of dollars on their various foundations. Now, most people are saying, aha, it's a plot to get him and her by the Republicans. I don't think so. My bet is it's Obama. And let me explain that because it's a little complicated. The Clintons hate Obama. Obama hates the Clintons. They've had tremendous friction between them. And they've only gone through the motions as if they get along. I think he's kind of behind this book, which will not help Hillary Clinton's campaign for presidency very much. I know this sounds very diabolical, but I'm pretty sure as a streetwise person, that's what's going on here, because this is not going to help her chances for the election.
This sounds very Manchurian candidate-ish.
Well, I mean, it is. I mean, Clinton and Ted Kennedy are famous for the line where they said when they didn't think they were being overheard, just referring to Obama, just think, a few weeks ago, this guy would have been serving us something.
Meanwhile, one of the things I have never been a fan of, no matter what city they're in, I'm sorry for the animal lovers out there, but I don't see the use for pigeons. I don't know why Noah put them on the ark with everything else, because we could do without them. But there's somebody out there who is coming up with a 3D scarecrow to scare the heck out of these birds.
Yeah, let me first recite my poem in regards to pigeons. Birdie, birdie in the sky, dropping whitewash in my eye. Gee, I'm glad cows can't fly. That's my poem. Now, what's the deal? Okay, now you have laser printers for this and 3D printers for that and everything. So there's a company that has come up and made a whole bunch of owls because it seems that pigeons get very nervous when they see owls. And who can get a real owl What you want to do is you go and you get a fake owl. So they've made a bunch of these 3D owls. They put them around, and they've put them right next to a plate of delicious food that the pigeons would want to eat. And even with that enticement, as soon as the pigeons see the owls, they take off. So it might be an idea that's going to work out for all kinds of different pests. Maybe we can have something that will scare cockroaches away.
Are there any animal rights groups that are already against this?
They probably will, but in New York City, I mean, I can give you a perfect example, like with furs. In New York City, all the ladies wear furs here, because in New York, you can pick at a fur salon, you can pick at a fur show, you can pick at a fur store, but you can't mess with a woman wearing a fur coat unless it's some kind of, special extinct or about to be extinct species. So ladies in New York do wear fur coats. So we're kind of used to furs and stuff. And the animal rights people, although I think well-intended in some cases, they're not much of a stand in New York City. So I don't think the owl makers have anything to worry about.
And speaking of animals, I understand there are certain creatures that are having a bit of a problem with their sex lives because of lights.
Yeah, well, and it's mainly birds coming from Canada and going back to Canada, because we're right in the path of that annual migration. And what they're afraid, and they found from the past, is a lot of those dopey Canadian birds. See how insulting I can be? Run into the buildings because they're all lit up. So they've come up with the idea that maybe it would be best to turn the lights off, which is also a bit of a dopey idea, you know. And what they're saying is that they're going to do it because it's also good for the environment and will conserve energy. Well, you know, I see, again, good intentions, but New York is its lights, is its skyscrapers and everything. So to turn off the lights, because if a bunch of Canadian birds, tell them to take a different route. Tell them to take a hike.
But didn't a city councilor or some person in city government say something about frogs have stopped mating, their mating activity during night football games when lights from nearby stadiums increase the sky glow?
Well, everybody knows that. Didn't you know that? Listen, the difference between you, me, and the politicians and your audience is that we all have to work and earn a living. Politicians have to think up new schemes and ideas that invariably are going to cost us money. And that's why the cockamamie scheme du jour is turning off New York City's lights. Why not blame it on the frogs, too?
Mm. And speaking of making a living, we're going to end off, unfortunately, with a sad note. I understand that there was a taxi driver who died.
Yeah, and they made a big deal about the fact that, well, he was 92. And what was a man 92 driving a car? Now, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's what people like to do in our society anyway, is make fun, ridicule of old people. The guy didn't die because he was 92. He died because something went wrong. He had a heart attack or what have you. You know, there's a lot of people 18 and 19 who also die suddenly. The other reason why I thought the story was a little bit amusing is that 92, big deal. I'm 94.
Well, I've seen you on your website and I've seen you on YouTube. You certainly don't look 94, sir, so you look great for your age.
Well, thank you, sir. It's my healthy living.
Okay. People can find more information by going to your website, which is www.gabby.com. They can also send you an email to peter@gabby.com. Thank you very much, sir, for being on the program with us once again.
Thank you.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program, but I do have one more Stuff File news story to share with you, and of course, there is an Idiot of the Day coming your way in just a matter of moments. We start off with this story that we just basically is the ultimate definition of irony. UK's Bedfordshire police were searching in April for a thief who ran off without paying for his Jesus arm tattoo at the Red Ink Luton studio to go along with Only God Can Judge Me, which was inked on his other arm. In fact, the shopkeeper also believes the man swiped the equivalent of about $1,548 from the cash drawer when he was momentarily left alone in the studio. As I said, Gotta be the ultimate definition of irony. And considering his tattoos, I'm guessing he's a believer. So he will have an interesting discussion on Judgment Day, won't he? Kind of a foolish thing to do, especially if you're a believer, and a believer to the sense that you're going to have it inked on your arms. But it doesn't make him the idiot of the day. But this next story, well, this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff off presents the idiot of the day.
A man featured on the Cascade County, Montana Crime Stoppers Facebook page as an April Most Wanted suspect and who apparently liked the internet post was arrested and appeared in court on a $2,500 warrant. 23-year-old Levi Charles Reardon was arrested without incident. Police records indicate he had two warrants for his arrest. Although Reardon had apparently since revoked his like on the post, the Great Falls Tribune managed to capture proof of the baffling event. Reardon made an initial court appearance for felony forgery. According to the court records, Reardon is a suspect in a case involving the theft of a wallet and personal checks from last January. So now, you know, these social media morons are becoming all too commonplace, but we still have to ask the question, why, oh why, would someone go to the trouble of liking their own wanted poster on a police Facebook page? Well, one reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0299. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0299. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. No animals were harmed in the production of this program, except, of course, the tasty ones. Good night and pass the paprika.